If you're going to come in and you've never played role playing before, I don't recommend Imagine as your first game. But if you are getting bored playing games because it just feels like I've already played a warrior, I've already played a priest or a, well, cleric or a wizard in some of those other games, then you'll have done it. You'll have felt what that feels like. I wanted to make a game that you could sit down and play, and every time you played it, it would be a different experience.
Jay's gonna bring me back. Give me a +1 to attack. Whoa, I won't come back to the dice. Whoa, I think I need some good advice. I need a roleplay rescue. Oh yeah. I need a roleplay rescue. Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hello, rescuers. My name's Che Webster, and this is Roleplay Rescue, the podcast about rediscovering our lost role-playing games hobby. And we're back. Sort of. As I said a few weeks ago, I am changing the pace of Roleplay Rescue from a regular podcast to being a, well, irregular podcast. In other words, although this is the first episode of the Resurrected Show, it may be sometime or not before I record another. But this episode couldn't wait. I thought about holding it back, but frankly, it was such a great conversation that I couldn't, in good conscience, do that. Today, I'm honoured to welcome W. Michael Tenery III, author of the Imagine role-playing system, to our show. Michael's game is something I discovered back around 2000 and have longed to play ever since. It's a game I've dabbled with but never dived into until now. During the interregnum betwixt seasons, I found myself back reading and solo playing Imagine, and well, it's a game I want to talk about more. Michael and I met through play about 2 years ago when, as a member of the Imagine Discord, I was invited to join in a one-shot adventure of Imagine set in Michael's world of Arastia. I had a great time and I would have continued had not scheduling proved tricky. Michael hails from Atlanta, Georgia in the USA, and there's a few hours between us. This conversation was triggered by a recent revival in interest surrounding Imagine following the posting of a YouTube video on the Random Encounter show about a month ago. I'll stick a link in the show notes because Michael references it during our conversation. The video coincided with my own return to Imagine, and it seemed a great time to invite Michael to come and talk some more. So big thank you to Michael for coming on the show. It was truly an inspiring conversation and I have been deeply affected by it. I cannot thank you enough for the time and the ideas that you've sparked, and I hope it sparks something for others as well. This is Season 14, Episode 1, Imagine with Michael Tenery. So my guest this evening is Michael Tenery, the author of Imagine, and just big thanks for coming on and talking to us.
Certainly.
So first question is, how did you get started with role-playing games? Let's go there.
Oh, gosh. In 77, same year Star Wars came out, my mother saw the white box on a shelf and bought it for me.
Right.
It took 6 months before I could play it. And that's because no one knew how where I lived. To learn how, I ended up having to go to a non-credited college course that they had at the local, I wouldn't even want to call it a university. It was more like junior college. And they had these courses you could go to that you could learn anything from, I'm just going to make stuff up, basket weaving to whatever. And you took them just for fun, you know, in the summertime. Yeah. And one of them was role-playing, this new thing.
Okay.
And I said, I've got this box. I'll go learn how to do it. And I went for, I think it was 3 weeks, one night a week for 3 weeks. And at the end of it, I knew how to play.
Right.
And what happened was I then was one of only three people in the little valley I grew up in, California, that knew how to play. And so I went down to the shop one day, the local game shop where my mom had bought it. And they said, oh, I see you're buying this role-playing stuff. I think I was buying a magazine at the time, one of the early Dragon magazines. And they said, can we put your name? Do you know how to play? And I said, yeah, I learned how and didn't have my certificate with me from the college. But I said, yeah, I know how to play. I could, you know, and they said, can you teach someone? And I said, sure. And they put my name on a list and I started getting calls from people. My parents had to drive me over to people's house to teach them how to play, but I started being a little person that went around teaching people how to play role playing. So I did that for years. That's how I got
Wow.
started.
I cannot believe you were accredited as a role player.
Very early on.
What did you make of that white box then? I mean, once you figured it out.
It was hard. At the one of the things they gave me, I didn't have it till later, was there's a little sheet that comes in chainmail that basically you need it to really to be able to play because it's part of the combat rules. And as part of the course we took, they gave us that sheet, and then I said, okay, I can play it, and I didn't know what it came from, so I was just copying it and putting it in, if it, and teaching people, oh, you need this sheet. So that's what we played with.
Cool. Okay. Now, the history says that Imagine sort of was born in 84. So we are looking at
Yes,
40
it was
years
several
now.
years later. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was the journey from White Box to starting to write your own game?
Well, for a while I played D&D just almost exclusively, and then I got a hold of Tunnels and Trolls, and I started playing that, and then Traveler, and even a little Boot Hill at the time. Let's see, what else was there? And then RuneQuest came out. And so I had a copy of RuneQuest, and I played that, and I really liked it. I said, there's things here that they're doing that I really think are good. The progression was what it existed just by skills. I said, I like aspects of all these things, but I have a problem with the way combat works. It feels kind of so abstracted that you have to kind of make it up as you go along about what really happened. And so we tried to do things cinematically, and I would describe things cinematically. And one girl I was playing with at the time said, well, you're just storytelling what happens. And I said, yeah, and you're welcome to say what happens too if you major hit. And I started incorporating them into that, but I realized it was kind of unsatisfying. And then I got the DMG, and I don't know if I'm sure you've read the AD&D DMG. I will never forget this. On page 9, Egg, Gary Gygax himself, says, D&D is not a simulation. It's one of the it, it's not, and it'd be absurd to do so. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want to make a simulation style game, and I've never stopped. I've been running ever since.
Okay. So, I mean, did you have a visceral reaction to reading those words then?
Yeah, I really did. I thought that there was room for that because I mean, there were letters to the Dragon magazine that I was reading at the time that basically said, we do these things, but we want to. We'd like this to be more, make more sense, or this, or and what is it with the timing that you've got in the Game Master's Guide that people can't figure out what segments are? And could you make this make sense to us? And I said, why, if you're going to do something as complicated as the segments, why don't you just do second by second, and then you figure out how long things take, and just make it like an action economy? I didn't know at the time the words action economy, but since then I was building an early action economy, and I was home brewing D&D long before I started Imagine. So for years between about 81 to 84, I was just playing a homebrew version of D&D. But then it got to the point where I'm like, this is becoming a whole other game. I just need to set this one aside, still play it with my friends when they want to, but let me get started making my own. And that's what I did in 84. And then we were going to the local convention called DundraCon in the Bay Area in California. And during that time, I was working on it, and I came out with these three books, which I still have: a player's guide, a game master, and also a big book of spells. And I just printed them off on 8.5 or long form, and then folded them, so you ended up with small booklets, kind of like Traveler. And when I had a good stack of them, we just went to Dragon or DungeonCon, and we played it there, and we just gave it away for free. So I was giving out like a couple hundred of these, and people were just playing it. And I knew we'd done something when 3 years later, I was sitting there playing it, and there were two other tables I could see in a big room of about 30 that were also playing it. So that's when I decided to keep going with it. It wasn't just for me anymore.
I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? It sort of transcends you as the designer.
Yeah.
I want to take a step back and ask you, like,
Sure.
what is it that you most enjoy about role-playing games? I mean, what kept you going? Because it's obviously a
Oh,
passion.
there are a couple things. The first one is, it feels like we're telling a collective story where part of it is I'm creating this backdrop, the sand, you know, these tombs terms are overused, but the sandbox.
Yeah.
But it's more than that. You're creating a world. It's when I read Tolkien, I felt that early on that the thing that wasn't being credited enough was not just the characters, which a lot of books had, but the world itself was a character. So as game master, I was giving them this character of a world. So that was an essential element. It had to be good enough that they felt like the world is a character. And the second part was that people were playing and got to be their characters and enjoy that feeling of becoming something else and telling their own individual stories as a collective story. And of course, being around the table with friends and acquaintances, and you know that there's just nothing like playing with people and learning about them by what they decide to do and whatnot, and you know, making as few judgments as possible and just leaving them to do what it is that they want to do and see where they go with it. That is, I mean, I've been playing for, gosh, 45 years or something like that, and I have never gotten bored with seeing a new player come in or even an older player pick a different direction or a different tack and just take that character down a path you didn't expect. And then the third element was that there's randomness to it, dice. So it does the story, even you got these players doing what they want, and you got this world you've set up for them that has consequences and things are happening around them. And yet the story still surprises you. What arises out of it with randomness, it's not a novel, it's not a movie, it's something else. And there's just nothing else that's quite like it. And if you go see a lot of movies, you often hear people talk about, yeah, I used to play D&D, or I used to play this role-playing game, and that inspired me in this direction. But even so, even with once they make a movie, this set thing, they're telling a specific story with the role-playing on the tabletop. Anything could happen, and does, and it's just so open-ended. And haven't found anything else that really does it. I think the closest I found was Baldur's Gate series, and now Baldur's Gate 3, where there was just so many possible choices that you end up with a story emerging that's slightly different than everyone else's. But that's as close as I've seen, and it doesn't even hold a candle to tabletop. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, it's fascinating to hear you talk about like world first. I mean, it's something I've realized over the years. I've been playing like you for 40 odd years, but it's the thing that draws me in. And I've been in all sorts of rabbit holes in this hobby. But really the thing that it keeps coming back to for me is this world thing. And when I picked up Imagine, I mean, I picked up Imagine in 2000. And I remember, I'm just gonna quote you here because there's a little bit of the starter book. It's on right just before the table of contents in the player's guide. There's this little thing of, have you looked out of a window and seen something different that you did than you did the day before? It was there, but you just didn't see it. And then by a trick of the light or a glimpse of shadow, you did. By picking up this book, you can see something different. You may not have looked at it in a while. When you first look, you may even think, I know what this is. But if you keep reading, it will hit you. There's something complete about this vision. Some way the light strikes or the shadow darkens to pull out the detail you always wish you could have seen before, and suddenly you
Thank you.
can. That quotation, that's what grabbed me. So I wanted to sort of fire that back to you. Where did that come from? Is that,
That's just for me. That's just who I am. You know, this acquaintance I had, I in California just started texting me again today. He goes, "Do you remember when we used to play games out in the backyard and you would just have me do things?" I said, "Yeah, I remember all of that." He said, "You would set up these elaborate You'd take you had neither of us had played with like we were both like 11 and 12, and neither of us had played with army men for years, but just for the fun of it, I would set up this elaborate hill and then put water at the top or running hose and create an actual waterfall with bridges across it, and we'd come up with these stories. And this was before I was role playing, so I think it was in me to do that. I was reading science fiction. It was a small town. There wasn't a lot to do, and you know, I just got really focused on imagination and creating things. And then when role playing came along and Star Wars, it just like this explosion went off in my brain, and I just never looked back. So yeah, I write a lot about things like that because I think, you know, that a cor incorporative storytelling, and also that we trying to take a different vision. The whole thing of Imagine is it's not D&D, it's not There are levels, and I do have the title system like you'd see in some of the older style games, but it really isn't an older style game. People say, "Oh, I see things in it that might be." Sure, there are some aspects there, like the names for titles and whatnot, that are sometimes ignored. But the RuneQuest thing about skills, I like that too. So what I did was I said, I want to create a simulation where you feel like you know more about your character, so you have not just the six stats, which but you have a sense of this is how smart I am. This is how physical I am. This is how spiritual I am. This is how, my social structure is, and how good looking I am, or how charismatic, and I'd wanted you to have a real strong sense of your character. And then I wanted you to have control of how you built that. Yeah, I want to play a ranger. Okay. I'm not throwing away the whole idea of rangers, but do you want to play a ranger that's a, an archer that spends most of their time with their bow? Do you want to play one that's a weapon master? Do you want to play one that's more into the animals and outside, or do you want to play a tracker? And you make those choices. You decide, except for the five core skills, which to be a ranger you have to have, you decide where you put those skill points to make the character your vision of it. And I have this guy I play with. I've told this story, like, I don't know, pretty much everybody I talk to, he's played a ranger 5 times in the 30 years we played together. Every time he plays a ranger, he plays it a different way. And like I just talked about, all the different ways. So that was the emphasis. That, and I wanted a simulation style fantasy where when you're going to hit somebody or something, you're just painting the target on them, and you're saying, and you can get a real intuitive sense of how you do that. The tw 20 isn't, okay, you guys are dancing around, something happens, I don't know, take 4 points towards some blob that you don't know what it is. And I'm not dinging any games at all, because gosh only knows I love what D&D has done, how it's brought everybody in. But I just wanted the ability to say, there's a you're gonna do this thing where you said you're gonna take your longsword and you wanna hit overhead, and there's enough room for you to hit overhead, and you're gonna roll to hit, and then you just paste your bullseye right on it, and you don't even have to look anything up. You just know that it's gonna take you 3 seconds, bring back, hit, pull back. And you just know. And then they know too. They know what they did. So anyway, that's the emphasis of it.
It's great. And just tell your enthusiasm for it as well. But simulation is like simulation, and what we both enjoy is deeply unfashionable and has been
Yeah,
for
it
quite a
is.
while.
I accept that.
So I mean, like, why do you, I mean, you got any idea why that's the why that has become that way?
Well,
Because,
I think people are busy, and
right.
I think, they want something they can just jump into and set aside quickly. But what I found was that they do set it aside easily, and sometimes they don't come back to it, often for years, because it doesn't keep them going. Now, there are people that you don't even need dice. You could have, the Matt Mercer kinds, where you could have a group of people sit there, and there didn't even ha wouldn't even have to be a system. They could just talk it out and do their voice acting, and you'd get a heck of a story. But for a lot of us, it just didn't feel like there wasn't enough grit there. There wasn't enough to dig into. And I think Rolemaster was starting to come out at the time, and I looked at Rolemaster, and there's things I like about Rolemaster. But it can also, you can spend a long time in the weeds with that. And I tried to find a balance, so that the problem with Imagine, I think, is the heavy lifting is on the game master. And I'm working on some products to make that easier. But the game master, the players will say, I want to do X, Y, and Z. And most of that is the game master going, oh, well, it means this. And I know this system works this way, or, and that. So there's a lot of heavy lifting on the game master. And the, if you look at the monster charts for what's in a monster, it's a lot more than, say, a lot of other systems. So yeah, that's what I'm trying to find, that balance between crunchy enough that you keep coming back, even if you're playing the same class of character, but not so crunchy that you're spending hours reading from a book trying to find the one table that you then have to roll on, and then roll on another table, and and leave those for just the times where it's special. Make it intuitive. Like the fives and 20s. If you notice that we use 20-sided dice and percentiles. Well, and what that's really about is fives and percentiles, and a 20 and 20 is also 1 through 100, if you think about it, because any roll on there is a 5% chance. And so everything is kind of between those two, and it gets intuitive. The math doesn't involve lots and lots of calculations after that, if you get used to it. Like if I tell you, for most of my players, if I tell them that, okay, this is a common skill, which is on page 77 of the player's guide, let's say legend lore. Okay, that's going to be a 15 versus knowledge. So they just look at their knowledge and see that they have an 18 knowledge. That means they have a 15% chance not having the skill. No, they don't. That's all. Once I tell them that, they don't have to look anything up, and so it becomes intuitive. So I'm trying to find that balance between crunchy enough to keep you, but intuitive enough that once you get it, you stay with it.
There's something about the style of the publication as well, though, that has grabbed me as well. And before we go
Sure.
too deep into the weeds of talking about the game rules, I wanted to reflect
That's fine.
a bit on the art, actually, and also the layout and everything else. I mean, it's black and white, big, heavy black and white interior tomes with black and white art, but it's so evocative.
Oh, thank you.
And again, you've got a range of artists, and if anyone hasn't looked, they really should look in the books, because there's those artists always listed first couple of pages in, and everything. But yeah, I mean, I'm flipping through my book here, and it's just that's the second thing that grabbed me, if you like, when I came to this, was the sense
Sure.
of this is a kind of it's got a medievalism to it, but it's got a sort of fairy talenesse to it as well, if I can
Oh,
put it
yeah.
that way. So yeah, what was the inspiration for that? Is that just, again, your style, or what?
Well, I've in actual when I was going to college, I spent a lot of time studying mythology, especially J Joseph Campbell, and a lot of the mythology that came out of, say, the Celtic period, and also Western Europe in general, and Norse. So a lot of it is comes from there. Plus, of course, Tolkien is always an influence. Anybody that tells you different is just not is not being honest.
It's just so much so. I mean, like the goblins, for example, they're like, that they're very Tolkien-esque in style, and that variety of look and thought in there as well is just one example. I'm looking at page 166, 167, and he's got these like really evocative art of, a sort of some kind of mage with a blasting away with a
Yeah,
some
I know
kind
what you're
of,
talking about, the combat.
And in the background is an archer taking down some goblins, and but somebody has gone down in the foreground. It's very active, it's very alive,
Oh, thank you.
and I think that's a style of art, I suppose, it's been rediscovered in some of the more recent like retro playing games and those kind of approaches. But yeah, it's just lovely to see, so
Oh,
wanted to
good, good.
comment.
Oh, one thing I wanted to add, the you'll see there's a lot of embellishments here and there. We called that style Celtic Nouveau. So it's like an Art Nouveau with a little Celtic take on it. So probably see it with the knots and things. So.
It's, again, it's very, very, well, it gives it a unique style, and unites the books, I suppose. And one of the things I'm grateful for as well is like maximum two column. It's quite nice print, big. As you get older, you appreciate these things, I think.
Oh yeah, these are readers.
So, reading back through the background, because on the website you've got a little summary of like the story,
Yeah, I wrote that.
and I think the combat bullseye you've alluded to already in our conversation, but let's talk about that a little bit more detail, because I
Sure.
think listeners will not know what we are talking about. And I'm interested in how that idea evolved.
Sure. The first version of the game didn't have it. The very first time when I had my before the booklets came out, I just put a percentage on it. So I took the body chart and I put a percentage. And so you were randomly hitting, and I said, we're going for this realism, and the random hit just doesn't seem realistic. There was another developer in my area called that did something called Arduin and Grimoire. Have you heard of that?
David Hargrave, yeah.
Exactly, David Hargrave. Now I knew him. And he said that having lived through Vietnam, he wanted to make everything really, really gritty. And I thought, ooh, I think I'm going to step back from the entrails, but keep it at the point of where you hit. And then it started getting me, okay, well, what are we doing when we're hitting? We're aiming at something. And if you're going to hit something, it shouldn't just be a percentage of, okay, the place that I want to hit is 75%, because that was the next step I went to. And I said, but that's not intuitive enough. You're going to be looking at that every time. You're going to have that in front of you. And then as you get better and those percentages increase, there's no way to easily have that and know. And I said, what if you could just take and paste it on there? And then I saw my dad was hunting at the time, and he had a picture of a bullseye. And I said, I bet we could apply something like that to this. And then I started doing, I had a couple swords, a mace, and a few things. I'm like, do these all apply with all these weapons? I said, I know it works for a projectile weapon, of course, but would it work for a sword? I'm like, sure. You just have to make sure that if you're going through the middle, all of those hit the top wherever you're going. If you're going through, if you're going sideways, all through the side. And once I started applying that, this is going to work much better. And as soon as I had that, it was off to the races.
So for the listener's benefit, what we're talking about here is a bullseye kind of like diagram with three concentric rings, right?
Right.
And
Miss hit or hit where you weren't, and then hit a dead center.
yeah, absolutely. So one of the beautiful things is like you described earlier, swinging down, you know, with your axe down on or your sword down on someone's head. You roll. If you're on target, you hit their head. If you go wide, you're going to come down and you hit your shoulders. You know, and obviously, if you go too wide, you miss. And you know, if you're swinging sideways, your axe, you go for someone's neck, you miss. Go high, hit their head. Go low, hit their shoulder. You know, I'm hoping people will get enough of an idea what we're talking about here. But it's painted onto a quite detailed body diagram. So you've got I don't know how many places there are on that. It's got to be 20, something like that.
19 for a basic
19.
humanoid.
Right, there you go. So you
21
know.
if they have wings.
Right.
Sorry, just years of this. I have it all memorized.
Yeah, so I mean, so just recently I was, you know, I'm running through a combat. I was just talking to you about it before we came on air, but you know, I had this barbaric human scout, wild
Sure.
scouts, shooting at one of my characters with his bow, targets the upper torso, misses, gets him in the mid torso,
Better, actually.
pretty much on target, but goes in there, better place to hit, actually.
Yeah. There's less because of your belly, there's less endurance there. You can take more. The idea, and by the way, one of our early play testers was a trauma surgeon.
Right.
And we talked about what areas he said, and then I also did some studying of the Battle of Hastings, which I don't know if I'm sure you know about. But most of the people died in the Battle of Hastings from head wounds and neck wounds.
Right,
That's what killed most of them. And so I knew that those were going to be big, and then also the next one was the mid torso. So even though it's got a big mass, it's got a lot of things to hit that can kill you.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that was the, you know, coming back to this game over the last few weeks, it's like that was the thing that immediately struck me. As you like, you read the book and you kind of think, okay, that's cool, I get that, and you can imagine it, you know, at the table. You can, and actually, it's quite a lot of fun when you play around a table to start swinging your arms around. Actually,
Yeah.
so I'm doing this. I'm moving from right to left. It matters whether I'm going right to left to
It
right,
does.
whether, you know, on all those kind of things. But then when you run through the system and you realize the impact of the weapons, you know that. Bow shot I talked about was rolling like 6d6, I think, with a bonus, you know, damage into the
Yep, it's gonna kill you.
torso. Yeah, it pretty much put the guy, well, he's run into negatives, and you know, it's not good at that
No.
point. So
It's
with
we try to be realistic. I'm
yeah,
just anyway, go on.
anyway, but the point and the reason I like telling the tale, I suppose, is to sort of say that yeah, this has definitely created a very visceral experience, which yeah, you do roll a die, but actually what you find yourself talking about is the impact and the
Yes.
description, and it kind of gives you a description, if that makes
Right.
sense.
Yeah, you visually, and again, you can go farther with it. Okay, I hit you in the head, and all right, all right, I was hit in the head. Well, if you get hit in the head at the end of the round, for every point of damage you take, there's a 2% chance you went unconscious because head hits cause that. And so we have, built-in critical hits that way. So.
And yeah, so it came from, you know, a hunting trip with dad, looking at the bullseye, thinking, can I paint this on? How did it go down when you first brought that to the table?
They immediately loved it in comparison to the percentage way we did it before. Because once they knew what the number they needed to hit was, then it's a corkscrew. So if you know what the middle number is, you just know that you can know the other numbers away from it real easily. And they weren't looking at it anymore. And the way that I knew it worked was every time they rolled a hit, they were telling me how they were going to strike. So
Right.
immediately they were visualizing themselves. So that's a huge improvement. And the second thing was they stopped looking. They stopped looking up things. They just intuited it after a while. And with those two things, I knew that that combat-wise, we really, really had something. I think combat, the two things I would say, well, three actually, the three things that are really different about Imagine is the combat is visceral with that, and it getting hit means something. You either want to parry that hit, avoid it, or have good enough armor to take it. Otherwise, you're going to go down. You're going prone. The second thing was the skill based and the control you have over make a lot of things skills that are class related, so that you have a lot more control over what your character becomes. And the third thing was the magic system, which isn't quite like anything else out there, I think. I don't see aura used that way. I mean, you can use mana, but that's like an idea coming from somewhere else, and you're not in control of it. With aura, it's you outward, and you have a very, well, people early on talk about how magic is feels more like a toolkit, and I said, yeah, initially, but eventually, you're getting very, very powerful, just like in many other systems. But initially, you're just trying to think your way through, what can I do to make something? But it's not a spell slot system in that you just cast and you're done for the whole thing. I did my spell, I guess I'm done. With the way it was at the time.
Yeah, so magic in Imagine has, you have the aura points, you're pushing that energy. So it's like a bit like spell point system, but not. But yeah, you're sort of, you have spells, you've memorized them, and then you kind of like use them over and over and over until you run out of energy, which is all
And you
good.
have an aura generation rate, so it comes
Yeah.
back faster and faster. So when you're very low, you maybe cast three or four spells, and you're going to wait a while. So maybe the next combat. Whereas when you get to a wizard level, when you're seventh title, you're just blasting away, maybe finger of fire or something else constantly.
And I there's some numbers in there that go into the like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of points you can be burning through, when you get to that sort of high enough level. So it's high enough titles. So it's a very powerful, I guess, at high end. Well, the other fascinating thing I wanted to ask you about was like the because you've got a lot of magical skills and divine magical skills which do things that in other games are spells. A great example with my priest is that he's got a healing skill, which is a divine magical skill, which is lay on hands basically and magically heal somebody. So yeah, how did that come about?
Very good question, very insightful, because initially I didn't give invocations to priests, which would be the equivalent of spells for mage. Until we went with the final edition, this newest one in the late 90s, I had the priests were skill based. So initially, almost everything was skill based, with spells being only for mage and mage types. So that was an extra thing they did, but they still had skills like they could do cryokinesis, where they control, cooling things down, or pyrokinesis, where they. In fact, one of the things you can only place you can actually throw a fireball is in pyrokinesis. So it's not actually a spell. You do it with pyrokinesis, which is a skill. So you're right. It was from the very beginning, we started off with skills being the focus, and even magical skills and divine magical skills. And rogues, of course, are stealth intrusive. So all their skills are stealth intrusive. And monks have discipline skills, and those that involve the body are discipline based. So yeah, that was very conscious to do that. But what happened was, when I brought the design team on, when we made the books in the just before 2000, when you got yours, was there was a strong feeling that, to be fair, that gods are giving you these powers, but it's not enough. And even though healing is a big deal, and curing and all the other things they did, that priests and the priest subtypes deserved invocations, and that would work in sphere of influences. And so I had a designer with me at the time, who I still credit. He's in every one of the books, because his even though he's not with us anymore, his impact is strong. Chris Carpinello, and you'll see his name in all the books, because he was a strong proponent of that, and then told me why, and I agreed. He was right. And now, so all the priest types have invocations. Now, the difference there is, they have a straight piety control, so their effects are always at a certain level, and it goes up as they go. And they only get a certain number of uses. If you want to say spell slots, it's not really spell slots. If it's a low piety spell, then you get 5 uses of it when you start out, and as you go up, you get it becomes 10, and then 15, and 20. So you get more of them. And then once you're done, all you have to do is pray again to get it back. And I thought that was a really good system. and it kind of matched really close to the Aura system, so I liked it. But I have to give Chris Carpinella credit for that. That was him.
It's highly evocative. I guess that, you know, the thing with the skill system again is that there's just so much. So learning to
Yes.
play is a case of like make a character and then muck around with it, and you have to go read your bits, don't you, and figure out what they, but some of these skills do things that you would never expect,
Oh,
which is
yeah.
just that makes it fascinating as well.
Like evoke.
Yes, evoke, yeah, but drawing on animal powers.
Yep. Has so many uses. Rangers have them, druids, shamans, you know, you can, there's so many uses for it. Plus, as I was saying in a Discord conversation, all a lycanthrope is in their half form is a human with all the evoke powers of whatever animal they're lycanthrope in.
Yeah. You've hinted at it, but I'm going to ask the question directly. What do you think that your game, Imagine, is offering that other games just don't?
A crunch that's not in vogue right now, that I think people who are going to, if you're going to come in and you've never played role playing before, I don't recommend Imagine as your first game. But if you are getting bored playing games because it just feels like I've already played a warrior, I've already played a priest or well, cleric or a wizard and some of those other games, then you'll have done it. You'll have felt what that feels like. I wanted to make a game that you could sit down and play, and every time you played it, it would be a different experience with a set of rules that didn't make it arbitrary. So it's not like, okay, you can make everything a different experience if you've got this amazing game master who just tells a good story and then turns what you do into a great story. But what that doesn't do is say, I'm trying to play this thing and I want to see what I can do with it. But here's a framework that you can work from. So Imagine is different, and it kind of builds that framework and that you fill out. So if you imagine what your ranger could be as this tree, the tree is there, it has branches. You're filling out the leaves on those branches, but it's not so just up in the air that okay, I'm gonna like oh yeah, a game I played a couple of times. There are other games where you have total control. You decide what every skill they have, and it's completely up to you. And the system may give, like GURPS, the system may give you a couple of ideas of packages that you could pick, but it leaves it so open that you're just doing whatever you want, picking whatever skills you want, and just going down on I don't want to say a random path, but you're making it up as you go along. So I'm looking for that balance between the two, between not only in you know how much a simulation it is versus how easy it is to use, the balance between those twos, but also the balance between it's totally open, you can do anything. The magic system is like Ars Magica, where you make a spell as you go, and it's amazing, it's great, but you never know what somebody's going to do, and so it's make as you go. So I'm looking for that balance, and I think that's what Imagine has done, is it fa finds this medium place between all of these things. And so I don't know of another system that does that. There's plenty of great, great low rule system that are just amazing. A lot of them have hit the scene recently. There's, if you really, really want a lot of detail, you can go down the Palladium path. You can get every kind of weapon from the every different head on it to whole books filled with the Palladium stuff. And Palladium was interesting too. And if you really want super, super detail, but you're gonna spend a long time on it, you've got Rolemaster. And I used to play Rolemaster a lot, especially during the Middle Earth era. I loved some Middle Earth role playing there. So, and so that's what we're trying to do with Imagine, is find that balance to be, you know, not too much of one or two the other, but enough that it holds on to you and that you say, oh yeah, I see something new in this every time I look at it. So that's what I'm trying to go for, and it's something I've played my whole life. And if I'm not enjoying it, I think the people who play it won't be. And at the end of the day, I'm not making it to, you know, get rich off of. I'm making it to make an experience that people remember and that sits with them and that they enjoy.
It's certainly, I mean, six books down over like 40-year period. I suppose now it's been about 30 or 20 odd 25 years ish, hasn't it, since this new
Yeah, I'm
edition.
25 since we went into the hardbacks. Yeah.
So there, lots of material, and of course more to come as well. We'll talk about that in a minute. What are you absolutely most proud of then? I mean, what is it that you've seen over the over those years with people playing Imagine that it makes you sort of sit back and smile and think, yep.
When I we do conventions sometimes. I wish I could go to more. If I was retired, I probably would. But we go to conventions and you get these wide-eyed people come and sit down and they go, oh, this, they look at the stack of books and they said, oh, this looks complicated and I don't know what to do. And I tell them everything's on your character sheet. And in fact, I, for their characters, I take the skills that they have and any spells or invocations they have. And I put a little 2 to 3 page attachment behind it, which pulls all that in for them. And so they don't have to look it up. But with just the character sheet and that, they're able to sit down and they watch. I usually have an early combat that's not as risky as some of the others because those can be very dangerous. So they get through that and they go, oh, this wasn't as hard as it is. The stack makes it look. And I'm like, exactly. And, when, and that is when they get it that I'm like, they got it. It's not hard. It's not as hard as it seems. And people look at that and they go, oh, that's, there's this huge stack of books. That's, it's got to be too much and too much. And if you're a game master, it can be daunting. But if you're just a player, I think you can get into it in an hour, maybe two. Most of that will be making the character. But if you've got a good game master, maybe they help you with that. And we also have a tool on our webpage, the game manager, that lets you, if you just want to make a character really quick, you can jump in and make one. And I'm working on, I'm, I want to say 92% done with a Roll20 character sheet that not only lets you create the character, but then all the actions from doing attribute saves to skills to everything else is going to be in. So the combat's already done. Combat, you you sit there and you put your weapons in there and you pick which style of attack, whether it's a cut or a thrust, and then you just, what do you want to do? Like I'm got my spear and I want to set against the charge and all that. You just open up a little open up a little tab and then it, you can go in there and set all the values and it calculates it for you. So it takes away all of that math that you don't have to worry about.
Not that it's actually that difficult, but yeah. Yeah, it looks daunting. And this is the thing, like over the years, I've come back to the game and then I sort of, you know, like, yeah, it'd be fun. And then you think, how am I going to get people into this? So let's talk about that GM thing, because that's the barrier.
It is. That's fair.
Because the wonderful thing that Imagine allows you to do is bring your world. But at the same time, yeah, it asks a lot. So what would your recommendations be for the, you know, for the aspiring Imagine GM?
Well, the Game Master's book has a lot of reference information for how to build out your world, gives you a handle on that. But what you need really quickly is adventures and things like that. And we have two of them out now. The second one has a lot of detail in it, and that's the Three from Reston, that is a more open-ended adventure that has various styles in it. And so get one of those, even the PDF, which is like $5 or something like that, and you'll have a pretty good idea how to make an adventure. Now, ours is a little more detailed in that we try to have what's going on in the adventure. So we present to you immediately, here's what could happen. And we make those as a series of tasks or events. And then we present to you what you as a game master could do if somebody went to talk to one of those people. And then at the end, we put all the encounter information so that you, oh, I'm in an encounter, I'm fighting, I just need that at that time, and you go do that. And so that's really what it takes. If you have those three things, it takes a while. I spend about 8 hours a week for, I have two games, one at a tabletop and one online, and I spend at least 8 hours at each one. So how do we make that easier? Well, I'm working on something called Masters and Minions, which will have extras, which you think of as NPCs, a whole list of them. So you can just pick one and say, oh, this is this type. I'm going to use that there. And you also have the books, which are filled with monsters. So you don't even have to write up any of those. You can just open the book to that page and play them. So if you need to be really quick and you want to just do it quickly, what I would do is jot down your basic town, make 1 to 3 encounter areas, and choose from among the different types of creatures you want to be in there that makes sense out of the books we have. And we have a lot of creatures out now. I mean, hundreds. And then for your GMCs, make a few leader characters, go to that game master thing, make a few leader characters that are going to be in charge, that you're going to be your big bosses if it's not a creature. And I think you have everything now, even without the Masters of Minions. But if you need it, I think we have, we've handed that out before of where I'm at with that now. It's just there's a lot to do. I'm going through, I have so many different projects I'm working on, so that's down the list a little bit.
Yeah, listeners, just get onto the Imagine Discord, which you can do for free by going to roleplaying.com, I think it's called, role with hyphen playing.com. And
Yeah,
then
we're pretty proud of that. We got that before role-playing.com before the internet was big. So, I mean, I
get in the Discord, and then you go into the there's a thing in there for resources, and then the pins, there's a good chunk of Masters and Minions stuff that you just have to steal, and it's there. So great stuff for that. Thank you. I want to talk a little bit about like your thinking behind GMC as well, because you have like GM extras, GM personalities, and GM characters. And of course, that terminology for me was relatively new, I think, when I came across it in 2000. It's kind of fallen into disrepute in more recent years. I think the idea of a GM character being that character that the NPC that the GM has created and then loves too much, you know.
Right. No, but I try not to get too attached to any of them, but I hear you. And that's one of the reasons I changed the names.
Yeah,
So,
but it's not actually what it means, because it's
right.
kind of progression from like the local baker is your GM extra, you know. Maybe the characters interact with them quite a lot, so you might flesh them out a bit more, especially if they're going to be involved in any kind of fight, or maybe they go on an expedition with the characters, and then
Right.
there might be, like you said, leaders or more important kind of characters that become the
Exactly.
GMC. So yeah, when you were sort of going back, coming into that design thought through the design of the game, like where were you coming from with that?
We had a design team at the time, and I want to credit Chris Dotson, who was also our art director at the time, and he said, "You should divide these up. I know you have these extras," and he called them extras. He said, "Got to think of it like it's theatrical." And I said, "You have all these people that are like minions, and we didn't, and then you have these leaders who are fully classed out, and they're leading everything." And so he said, "But there are also people where you're just talking to them, and you need to know enough about their personality to be able to figure out their motivations." And so created a system where you can pick a number of attributes. I don't mean attributes like attributes. A number of driving forces. Are they a rising star in whatever area they're in, or are they falling? Are they organized or disorganized? A bunch of things, traits that you can pick, and then you have your personality. And an extra is somebody who may or may not be in a fight. Maybe that baker's going to end up in a brawl. You have just enough stats that they can survive a brawl or get into a brawl. But you don't have a full-on character, and you don't need one. So you go f and maybe the personality ends up needing the extras because they start to get involved. So you can have combinations of them. So and the idea is that you work your way up so that maybe they're just a personality of somebody you talk to. Maybe the extra is just somebody that happens to be around that might be in a fight or is very simple. And then the full GMC, the full Game Master character, is just for those people that are either going to fight with you or fight against you. And that way, you're not spending a lot of time. You focus your energy on just the thing you need. And that helps your thinking as you prep for that. And if you look at the first thing we put out, which was the Barrow McMaren, again, a very Celtic tale, you'll see that that's the way it's divided up too. And we do the same thing with the three from Reston, is divide those into those three groups, plus the encounters, the creatures that you're going to meet.
The last bit of the game I wanted to talk about briefly was just about with the GM guide or the master's manual. You have this thing about thread weaving. It's kind of the thing, it's a terminology that you use in sort of how to go about game mastering, which again I found quite fascinating. So yeah, tell us a little bit about the thinking there.
Okay. Again, I want to credit Chris Dotson, who I was doing something like that, but he used the terminology. And the idea is that you've got all these characters, but and you also have the people they're going against. And so you create this web, and you see what gets tugged on. You're the spider sitting in the middle of it, and you don't fill out everything. You maybe have a few notes for the areas around. And then, okay, they start getting really interested in, oh, the goblin attacks, because this character said that their parents died from a goblin attack. So they pull on that. Then you head down that thread path. And maybe there's another one where, okay, but this person is from a merchant family and they are really concerned about reestablishing trade. So now you're pulling on both two threads that end up going to the same place. And then you get the characters working in those directions. And then you, as a game master, can focus in. So you're not doing what I often get trapped in, which is you're creating an area so detailed that anything can happen and you need to do it all at once. Instead, focus, create just what you need to start, and maybe one to three adventuring areas around it where you know what to do. And then just enough, I guess I call them hooks these days, that they know what the threads are. They get hooked on those threads.
It's very player-led, it seems to me.
Yes.
And what is interesting about what you talked about as well is, again, thinking back to when I first came across this in 2000, was this idea of faction play as well, which of
Oh,
course
yeah,
has
that's
become
big.
big now, but wasn't in the
No.
late 90s at all. So was that something that, again, you discovered working with Chris, or?
No. That was me. Factions are me. And with all the design team was interested in it, but I always had factions. And one of the rewards you got was you didn't just get experience or money or treasure. It was also, how are you doing in the faction? Maybe these the, how do you stop? And I shouldn't say stop, because there's always going to be murder hobos. How do you engage people in such a way that they don't want to be murder hobos? And if they see that their reputation is rising, maybe you're in a city. I've got a city now that has like four factions, four major factions that are well known. There's lots of other small ones, but you're seeing that your faction's rising with the common people. They start to recognize you. That gives the players a sense that they've done something. And then the nobility also looks at you and either sees you as a threat, or if you don't have it, then they see you as a possible tool and their faction is rising with them or shrinking. And so you, by balancing those things, you get a real sense of how the character's doing in the web of their environment. And I think without factions, you don't know that part of it. You're detached from the social game unless the game master is smart enough to make that up as they go. And I'd rather there was a faction system in there that you can rise up and down on, depending on how you do,
That's cool.
as its own reward, you know? What I found was I used to give experience for treasure, and except for rogues, I no longer do. I find that experience for the combat and healing and the rewards they get from factions and the work they do there ends up being more important to them long term than it surprised me over time. I've headed down that path.
I think really at heart, many role players they want to immerse themselves and lose themselves in the fantasy world
Yes.
and feel that their character is making a difference, right? And so, yeah, by influence, I mean, just think about it. In the real world, that's how it works. You influence the people around you, and that's how things change. So, or not.
Right, maybe.
But
Yeah.
absolutely, that interaction with the other characters in the world is kind of key.
I agree.
I just remembered, actually, I wanted to talk to you about Legends, because at the start of Legends, you've got a very special th a thing that I discovered that I found very special, the guided character creation system.
Yeah. That was me. That's all me. I did that one.
Well, what I want to just talk about is, like, where the, because it's, again, for the listeners who don't know, I play with this with some players who didn't know they were playing Imagine about 3 years ago now. I got them to create characters using that process, and then we played just a few sessions where they didn't really know the rules. So it was just completely descriptive, and I was running all the rules behind the screen. But the bit that was most fascinating to them was their character creation, which went through the guided process, very long, starting at birth, way through to when they're about 20 or something. But what they loved was those moral dilemmas. You got these little situations that pick up, they're called choices. And each stage of your life, you have these little situations. So maybe it's like you're playing in the yard, and you're playing a game with the other kids, and one of the adults who's supervising you gets called away. What do you do? Do you cheat?
Yeah,
deeply.
I created all the choices, but I have to give credit to Brian Carroll, who was our editor and also the person who does the layout. He figured out what to call each one to make it jump out. So even though I had the format, he really made it jump out. So I want to give Brian a credit there. Also, another thing about Brian, even though Chris Carpinello was really the early person who came up with invocations, Brian Carroll has come up with some amazing invocations and some of the more what do you call it? Divine classes. He's done a really amazing job with that, as well as he does the layout editing for all the books.
Where did that extended guided character creation thing, what's the necessity for that coming from originally? Because obviously the original,
I
the
was.
core game is is kind of random character generation broadly. It's kind of the basic thing, and it's involved, and you make a lot of choices. So yeah, where did that kind of come from?
Okay, well, the first thing that clued me in that maybe something like that would be interesting was two things. One, I played a lot of video games when I was younger, and there is, I'm trying to remember which one it was, but you, and it wasn't quite the same thing, but when you were, I think it was Ravenloft, where you're picking cards, and based on the cards that you pick, your character is going to come out of that. And I thought, that's an interesting concept, but I don't think it even begins to go far enough for what I wanted to happen. And I was also getting these characters that said, I want to start my kids in childhood. So can we make zero title characters? And I said, sure, let's make zero title characters and let's go even farther back. Let's see how they got there. And instead of writing a 20-page backstory that may get tossed and nobody, I'll try to pull a few things from it, but doesn't really end up anywhere. Let's play it out in maybe one or two sessions and see what choices you make and where you end up. What if the based on your choices, what is naturally arises is your alignment. And there is alignment, let's imagine, but there's still alignment if you want to play that way, and that's the standard way to play. And that way your alignment can rise out of your actions. And also you can get a few bonuses to attributes that way too. Maybe you choose to be more athletic and do things more athletic. And so that's the idea, that you start off and you have some very basic choices you make, but then that gets more closer and closer to classes. So as you go along, you're starting to get towards where you. And I really wanted that you to have that background to naturally be able to develop a background as play, so that,
And I think that's what my players valued, a couple of years ago when we played with it. It was this sense, what I got from them was the sense that they felt like they were embedded in the world by the time they got to play, that their character grown up,
focus.
had a family, had kind of these people around them. They knew how they fit in to some degree.
Oh, they're not all orphan farm boys? I'm
Yeah,
sorry.
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? But also, like they th then, the first adventure I ran with them, that they're it's kind of like a sort of a fantasy Northern Britain, and there was a sort of Roman fort in the north, and this where they were living, and it gets completely taken out.
North Umber.
And the thing is, though, that in that particular game, I think the characters and the players felt dislocated, very very quickly from
They're
that
at
kind of
home.
place, in that situation, in a way that they perhaps hadn't experienced anywhere else. And it simply was because we'd spent like a few hours with me. We spent about 2, 3 hours, something like that, one on one, doing these characters, yeah, it's quite fascinating. So something I would recommend people try if they haven't anyway.
And as a bookend to that, there's another style of play that doesn't get talked about as much, and that's the end game, where you're not necessarily adventuring day to day, but you've set up, I don't want to say an empire, but a maybe you have a home base, and that could be a stronghold, or it could be your thieves guild, or it could be a new temple with a new religious sect, and you want to find out not only run that, but then you can send out adventurers that work for you as followers to try to figure out what you want to do. And you still want to be involved with the world. In fact, you find out you're more involved in the world during that kind of play. And that, yeah, and then every once in a while you go out and you have the big adventure. But you're also really, your character is semi-retired, and you're getting even deeper embedded in the world. You have a huge impact. So I saw that was already happening. I've been doing that for years, ever since some of the D&D days, the Castle Crusade Society, where that was all set up that way, that you were a baron and you went off and made your whatnot. I said, that's great. How about we put this other one in where you start off and you're already involved in some way? And so with those two bookends, then everything in the middle of your adventures have a place they started and a place they could end up if you want to do the whole thing.
That's great.
So it's supposed to be a gestalt.
I'm conscious of time.
I'm good, whatever you need.
A couple of questions, really. One of
Sure.
the best ones is, I mean, Roleplay Rescue, my podcast, is about getting people back into the role-playing hobby. Often they've drifted
Right.
away. Do you know what I mean? And I always ask guests, like, what's your tips for coming back? So if someone is sitting there listening, thinking, well, that sounds kind of neat. I used to play D&D back in the day or whatever. What would you say?
Make sure they get to explore something they haven't in the past. Maybe they've been a mage or something before, or they've been a warrior, but they have a hankering to do something else. Make sure you give enough time to talk to them to say, what didn't you get to do the last time you played? What were you excited about or thought maybe would be interesting that you didn't try? And then tailor it so that they have that chance to do that. So they're going to get their chance of being fulfilled. Maybe it won't work out, but at least you have a better chance if you spend enough time to get to know them to see what they like. One of the things I find is not only with the conventions I go to sometimes, but that I get every kind of player from somebody who wants to role play and talk to all the GMCs and figure out the stories by doing that, and maybe even avoid combat if possible. So they'll talk to the goblins and say, look, we could kill you. We could have a fight. One of us is going to win, but both of us are going to get hurt. Or you could go off to this other place that nobody's at, then, and we'll even help you out. We'll do. And I was just this, when the woman did that, I was like, wow, that is so awesome.
Yeah.
But that's the way she wanted to play. And instead of saying, oh no, this is combat and we got to fight and to work it all out, you got to lean into where they're going. Don't, it's in improvs call it yes. And
yeah.
So I would say you got to go down. They want to do this, you got to do it with them. So find out what they want, see where they're headed, and make sure they get to go down that path. It's not always going to work out, but at least they'll have a good shot at it. And if you're not interfering with what they're trying to do, or trying to make it a different game than they're trying to play.
What do you think the role of the GM is?
Well, they're not storytellers. Players are telling their story. You're painting everything around so that the story they tell will have color and that they're embedded in the places, so they know who their parents are and they know who's against them and they know what it feels like to win. And if you don't do a good job as a game master, then, oh, it's just goblin number 467. And so goblin 467 was the same as goblin 342, and you don't care as much. So make sure that you're providing them with the kind of depth of experience they're looking for. So I think that you have to be a facilitator. I think more than anything else, a game master is a good facilitator. You're not giving them everything they want. That's that the yes and can go too far, where they have no chance of losing. Everything's going to work out for them. No, there's barriers, and you do have to set up the barriers. You just have to make sure they're not impossible, and that the barriers you set up are the right ones they want to topple over or go through or try to go through. Even if they failed, you weren't being arbitrary and saying, nope, can't do that. I say so, you know?
Awesome.
So I Game Master, if I had one word, it's facilitator.
What is the question that you always wish someone would ask you that they never ask you? This is the opportunity. Now, what have we missed that you really, really like to talk about?
Well, the one I got asked recently was why I didn't make a world.
Right.
And the answer is I really did. I've got four worlds. One of them fills up 14 binders. So I've got a whole bookshelf, full of worlds. But what I'd hope to happen, and I think if I'm 100% honest, where Imagine didn't take off was we didn't hand them a world. They didn't get Faerun or Faerun, excuse me, or, Earth Dawn, which was built into the system, or any of these things where you get the world with it. And so because we're asking the game master to have the imagination to create the world, there's a barrier there. And what I was hoping was that the game masters would take that on and be excited to do that. And it turns out there's fewer of us that just love making worlds for people to play in than there is people who would just like to open up a book that has a whole world, somebody else's world they can play in and just do that. I have for a long time have tried to get push people to paint with the colors they want. Here, imagine if you look through all the books, even the bestiaries, it is a paintbrush with a canvas of everything you could want to do. And the idea is you just sit down and you paint with what you want your world to be, how you want it to look. If I just tell you how to do that, I feel like I'm shortchanging you. Now, there's a lot of people that disagree with me. Give them a world. And I may do that, but it'll probably be the last thing I do.
Yeah. It sounds a lot like you have the similar expectation that maybe Gygax and Arneson had. Because
Yeah.
we get the sense looking back on the history, you know, when they published D&D in 74, they didn't think anybody, people are going to go and have fun with this. And then, of course, the
Right.
first thing they asked for is like, well, you know, can we have a world?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's very strange, but yeah, it sounds like you have that same kind of experience, really.
Yeah, I to be fair, I do have that bias that I think that the best playing experiences are going to be the unique ones that a game master comes up with. Then I'm not looking to create a cookie cutter that everybody's played Tomb of Horrors so that they know what Tomb of Horrors looks like. And your experience is, oh, I did X, Y, and Z that everybody else has done. I was hoping that you'd have an individual experience.
Yeah.
But based on the popularity of how often I'm printing out modules for or scenarios for people, it looks like there's a fair amount of desire there too. So we'll probably ultimately end up do fulfilling that, but it is at the back of what we're already doing.
Yeah. So the last thing to ask really is what's coming soon? Because I mean, there's been
Oh,
20
yeah.
years of publications. We've got six books out already. You just released one at the end of 2023, you know, for Mystery of the Planes, is it? And
Yeah, it's a thick
yeah.
one.
Yeah, it is. Whopping great book. And by the way, thank you for making that available on Lulu to save a little bit of postage. The quality's not
Yeah,
quite
I
the
wish we
same.
could do it better. So,
Yeah, but well, it's not quite the same quality, but at least you can get the book.
right, exactly.
it's always good. But
So,
anyway, yeah, what's you said there's two or
okay,
three
there's a
things.
lot in the pipe. Right now, I'm just finishing out a French city for my world that I have promised to some characters, and I'll be done with it in a week and a half, and then pretty much 2 weeks, give or take. And then I'm jumping right back into the Roll20 character and to get that finished. And my idea is to have that in beta sometime in early summer, and that people are out there in the Roll20 game playing that and getting feedback on it and making any changes. And then I'm going to go to Roll20 and see if I can get that as the official instead of some download or whatnot, but that actually be in the official Roll20 once it gets to its beta period. I think having that will make the game very easy to play. So you'll have Roll20, you'll have that. And then right after that, my next one is it's there's two things kind of going on. I don't know if you, well, I'm sure you know now, there's just been a video. So the video, the guy who did the video, I don't want to use his real name, but he Deathstalker 5, he has asked for a solo game. And so what I'm probably going to do is as soon as I finish the Roll20 character sheet, I'm going to make a solo experience scenario so that you can sit down by yourself. And the way I've worked it out kind of right now is you can make or pick a character type, and then there'll be two of each of the main kinds of classes, two warriors, two priests, two mages types, and two rogues. And then what you do is pick a complementary one. So if you want to be a warrior, maybe you need a priest with you because you're going to fight a lot. Or you're going to be very stealthy, so maybe you need a mage. You pick a rogue, but maybe you need a mage to help you with the toolkits. And so you pick you and one companion, and then you go on this adventure. And you, if you talk to people, it says go to this page and do this, or roll on this, and then this can happen. And then as you do the combats, it'll say, okay, you're fighting these people, and this is how they will react to this kind of character. They'll go after a healer, or they'll target the strongest person. And that way you get a real sense of, and it'll be a play out explaining how to do it. Kind of like if you look at the player's guide right now, you have an in-depth combat where it walks through the combat step by step. We're going to do that with a little less detail, but telling you what they're going to do. So you will kind of have to use that as a background, but it'll tell you, okay, they're going to take out their axe and they're going to go for the weakest spot they can see on your priest or, and that kind of thing. So, and then there'll be adventure areas around. And so you can go do all that. And I'm talking about the end of it, making it a little like a hex crawl. So you go to the next hex over, so the main hex of the town, and then all the hexes around are done with at least three or four areas that you can go into, very small dungeon type things or a tower or a fallen keep. And then after that, you'll go to a different hex if you want to go past that. And then all of that will be determined randomly. So that once you've done your adventure, you can then continue on playing by yourself by having it randomly generating in a roguelike game. So that way it's got some utility. And that's going to be my focus probably until I get that done. And I'm going to spend a lot of time trying to make that as useful as people, because I'm hearing that people would like to just play by themselves, learn the game, and then they can pass it on to others. So that's going to be a focus. Oh, and after that, the next one is a Game Master tool, Masters and Minions, which will be all of the evil humanoids. So our humans, humankins, so evil civilized humans, evil barbarians, merfolk, a couple midfolk, only a couple midfolk, they're evil. The different elemental types, Jin, Dao, Merit. Anyway, so you have a pastiche of that with some random tables to help you create characters and then or create treasure and whatnot. And then also a sheet that shows I'm a warrior. Here's my stats if I'm a human or barbarian, and then all through the levels. So as you go up, okay, so I'm a third title. That means I have this, 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 and you could populate it in, 10 minutes on a character sheet if you wanted to. And that way you just with the book you have, and at the end of the book there'll be three scenarios done out. A bandit camp, and I'm going to do the bandit camp. So you have a low level bandit camp, and then I said, all right, now here's the second version of that, which is a higher level bandit camp. Maybe, so you've got a higher level, and do the same thing with it's going to be two others, a barbarian village that's a conquering type, so like an evil barbarian village, and the third one is like a planar, a series of planar rogues that they have gateways where they go steal, so a higher level adventure. So you have all these various elemental beings, evil elemental beings that go around stealing from everywhere, and you can turn it into a battle or a heist or whatever you want to do. And then you have those examples as a game master. You were asking me earlier, how do you gonna do that? Well, there's everything you need right there if you're gonna involve humankind. And there's two beyond that, which are that I've already started working on, the goblins, goblinkin, which is goblins. And by the way, goblins means goblins and orcs. I just didn't want to use orcs because people get crazy about that because it is Tolkien, and and so then the other part one is saurians, and there's a lot of different kinds of saurians from the little Sreths to the Sieth and the snake people. So those are the three masters and minions I've got. And then the biggest one that's coming out, this is going to finish the planned bestiary series, is Conquest of the Eternal, which are all the deities, which right now include Egyptian, Norse. We're looking at Mesoamerican spirits of animals and animal types, from wolves to all the way up the grand great spirits, and several more probably. It'll include devils and demons, which are different. Demons are from the abyss. Devils are from hell. Angels. Archons, which are like creatures of perfection that you don't want to tangle with because they are trying to achieve something perfectly, and if they involve you, it's probably not a good deal. Let's see what else is included in there. Well, there's also the plane of balance, which is this where most of the spirits are and the animal creatures that are, and where you go to if you're in between evil and good. And that's one where you can play. They have the Infernals, Devas, which are the neutral ones, and Celestials, are the good ones. So, those are they'll be a template, so you can take any race and also demigods. So, if you want to be a descendant from a deity, there'll be a way to play that as having a template on top of your character, so you can do the Hercules style adventures. So that's coming. The dragons will be in that book as well. There's a lot of good classes in there. And then after that, it'll be what people want, whatever they're asking for. I'm trying to listen to, I hope people can see on Discord that we're responsive when they say we'd like to see this. That'll get our focus. Keep just go on Discord and tell us what you want, and then I'll work on it. That's what I plan to do with the rest of my life. Anyway, hopefully that answers the question.
It does, and you can tell your passion as well, so that's all there.
Yeah.
Michael, it's been ages, so we've already able to wrap things up, but I just want to say thank you so much for coming on, and maybe we'll get on
I
again.
appreciate it.
Just great to talk to you and to like
Yeah.
rediscover this game as well, because that's what it's been for me. I keep coming back. It's time to like bring it to the table, I think. But there we go.
No, take care.
Thanks so much for your time.
Anytime.
Big thank you once again to Michael for coming and sharing his passion. I'll stick a link to the Imagine website in the show notes. As ever, if you have any questions or comments, I'd love to hear from you. Call in via speakpipe.com/roleplayrescue and leave a message. Thanks once again to all the Roleplay Rescue patrons who support the show through patreon.com/rpgrescue. Thank you also to John from Tale of the Manticore for the Roleplay Rescue theme music. And most of all, thank you to you for showing up and listening. I hope you found it as inspiring as I did. My name is Che Webster. This is Roleplay Rescue. I'll see you again next time. Game on.